The Football Show on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.
I'm prepared to do anything I can to
defend
my country again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Now then, you're very welcome along. Busy football show coming up. Pat Nevin is going to join us in about 20 minutes time or so. In the meantime, Dan McDonald of the Irish Independent is here.
I am here, Joe.
Dan, hello. Lots going on. I know you're a political nerd.
I've been fond of the elections and whatnot.
I'm not even judging.
I make no apologies for it.
That's more like it.
I can waffle on and say, yeah, I did a master's in politics, did art, history and politics, an arts degree. But then, that doesn't sound very impressive, like it's an arts degree. But then a master's afterwards in an MA in politics.
Wow.
Miguel Delaney was in my class as well, actually.
Miguel Delaney?
Yeah, I was in my MA in politics class. So, like, no one was actually there with any interest in actually working in, the political world in the future. But it's actually, yeah, it's funny, quite a few people that actually I did know around that time are all involved in the electoral circuit and scene.
Go on, give me some names.
Well, I would have been in college with Keane O'Callaghan, who's one of the candidates.
In my new constituency.
Your new constituency, yeah, and my constituency now as well. Dermot Looney, a friend of mine, was in college with. He was, part of sort of the crew would have hung around there at that time. He was running the Social Democrats campaign this time as well. And Paul Murphy was in college he was in that circuit around that time. I'm trying to think, yeah, quite a few others. So a lot of them are trying to getting to that generation now. Well, I think Owen Murphy would have been in UCD around the time I was there.
Right.
He would have been involved in the Drama Society. I don't recall him being involved in the student political scene.
That seemed like a dig to me there, you just...
No, did. I did not. I mean, there's great drama in the election, so maybe this is a prep for it. I think Neil Richmond and a couple of others. I might have been in a tutorial with him. Okay. A lot of them. So they're all... So yeah, I've always had a keen interest in it. So it's like a transfer deadline day with meaning.
No, listen, it's very, very gripping.
It's fascinating.
Intriguing.
It's
fascinating.
I find it extremely interesting.
I've been enjoying turning on the radio and at strange times hearing Pat Kenny on when he shouldn't be on, and Ivan Yates across the
show. Yeah,
all the big hitters.
I'm not even
are
saying
out.
It now, but yesterday, like, there was a spoil for choice across all stations, and listened to News Talk for a good part of the morning when Ivan Yates was on, and it was just, it's so good, it's so interesting. And I think the other thing as well, and we might talk about this in time, but it sort of straddles. Like, I've sort of straddled two worlds to a degree in the last year because the Oireachtas committees and the Dáil and all the days.
I was just trying to get to it now. So,
but that was your clever segue.
To a point, yeah. But Shane Ross, in what I heard in particular over the last few days, is a very volatile constituency, Dunleary Rathdown. It can often vote you in and then throw you out just as quickly. So Shane Ross, a victim of that, but probably in reality a victim of the circumstances. It's not totally inexplicable. So there have been a few things with Ross. He got caught up in being accused of, hockey pitches in his own constituency, and that was a controversy. Although really, that should actually, in a Healy Ray kind of way, keep you being voted in. Mm. But certainly the Greyhound thing cropped up a little bit, but I don't know if that was a big factor. If there was any obvious scandal which has ended his political reign, it has been his perceived role in the FAI crisis. It would have
I think.
To be. Do you not think?
I'm not convinced, I have to admit. I think politics can be so local in Ireland. And it was strange. I was looking at the coverage last night, and I think it was in 2011, he cleared it by 5,000 votes the first time. Like, he was in like a Sinn Féin candidate this time in terms of scaling the quote first time round. I don't know if it's close enough, if it's been close enough to say you could put it down to one single issue. It's possible that he has wound people up and he's...
Take his tweet at Christmas.
Yeah, no, that was a mistake, and I think that's... It's possible that a combination of that and the combination of the fact that he's had a bit of a run at it. Mm. The constituency that he's in, it's not necessarily been one that represents massive change. It's one of the places actually where Sinn Féin didn't get in. So it's been more of a swing, with some established people, political animals there. So I don't know. I'm not actually so sure if the FAI thing really cost him. I mean, I think the bizarre thing about Shane Ross is that having, across the course of a year, been a central figure in this whatever you want to call this FAI period, this FAI crisis, this turmoil, and having been at loggerheads and at war, I think, with the FAI for large parts of it, and made statements and stuff that really, really annoyed people, he actually finished reasonably well on it in terms of how some people I know within the football community would now speak of him. They would say that the last thing, his last act, was part of that deal that was drafted that actually will probably leave a legacy of some reforms to the FAI in terms of taking out some long-standing people who probably needed, you know, they needed to be changed. And he did push it. And even with people in the League of Ireland who were being fuming and probably the top his top critics nearly, you know, in sort of September, October, November. And then he, that comment in the Dáil in December where he stood up and said something about, you know, the League of Ireland, well, the FAI goes, League of Ireland goes. I don't think he even thought about it. Yeah. Those people now would say, in fairness to him, he listened to a lot of what they said in the aftermath, set up a meeting, and probably has helped to lay the foundations for some changes that might happen. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that doesn't change a lot of the criticism, the constituency-based stuff. I'm not saying that. I'm not coming across as a massive defender of Shane. I would have hammered Shane Ross consistently. But I actually think, bizarrely enough, he's left a better legacy with regard to Irish football than you would have thought possible 6 months ago. Okay. That's for sure.
All this week, we're giving you the chance to win flights, accommodation tickets to Man City against Real Madrid. So, brilliant prize. 17th of March, this game. It's with thanks to Virgin Media Sport. To enter this end-of-week draw, identify your mystery voice. Doesn't like the fact Love Island now has a winter series. He reckons the formula was working just fine without it.
They weren't doing it last year at all.
They got greedy.
They weren't doing it last year at all.
Text your name and answer to 53106 for 30 cents and we'll get back to you after the show this evening. All with thanks to Virgin Media Sport. Over 400 UEFA Champions League, Europa League and Nations League games all live this season. Available to all Virgin Media TV customers. You can also download the TV Anywhere app and stream all the action whenever and wherever they like. Now, there's a rather important game coming up on the horizon. Mick McCarthy was in town today. Excuse
Get
me.
With the positive message, Joe. Game? No, we're playing two games in March, right?
Well,
we're playing two games in March, right?
Right.
Yes.
So there are some an important doubleheader coming up very soon.
Yes, there you go.
So Mick McCarthy was in town to do what today?
He was in town for, it's an announcement of a new sponsorship deal with Elvery's for the summer soccer schools.
Okay. So FAI bringing in sponsorship.
I think it was previously Sports Direct. That sponsorship didn't work out so well. he was in town for it. It's first time he's been in sort of doing press in 2020.
Was FAI business off limits or was it free reign?
To be honest, I know that you guys had your own sort of chat with him, which you're going to play out.
Yeah.
But the sort of main part that I was there, it was a bit more of an open event with sort of a couple of kids there, and it was downstairs in a shop. And it wasn't quite your round table environment where you'd normally have. There would have been a couple of questions put to him about that, but in our setting anyway, it wasn't necessarily a great forum for discussion. But Niall Quinn was lingering around, obviously, in the background. And so, I mean, the change was visible, but not necessarily discussed to any great degree.
Okay, well, our own Stephen Doyle got 5-6 minutes with Mick McCarthy, one-on-one. Have a listen.
Mick, I just wanted to ask you first about you were talking about Troy Parrott in the press conference there, and you were saying that maybe a little bit frustrated that he's not gone somewhere to get games under his belt. And I suppose just listening to Jose Mourinho's comments about him over the last couple of months, he was saying that he's still young, there's still plenty of time for him to get those games. Can you see maybe where his club manager is coming from?
Well, listen, I'm not going to cut across Jose Mourinho, but he's going to get his games where? At Tottenham? Yeah, he has got. He's just turned 18. Yeah, he's got loads of time to get his games, but not to play in Slovakia. He hasn't. So that you're asking me two different questions here, really. So, if he wants to be in the squad with me, and for the European Championships, when we qualify, then he has to play. He has to be playing serious football, which I'm talking about in a league. Even whether it's the first division at competitive level, championship. If we're just talking about his career, he's got loads of time to play. He's 18, he might play till he's 38, he might have a 20-year career, he might play 700 games. But I get asked in relation to playing for Ireland in the next 2 months and then in July. and that's a different ball game altogether.
Yeah, I totally understand where you're coming from. I suppose is it then just that you're just frustrated then because you would have liked to have him in as a player who's played a few senior matches?
I'm frustrated for him. No, he wanted to go and play. They were looking forward to him. MK Dons wanted him, Charlton wanted him. I think the deal was almost done with Charlton, and then found out that he would be classed as a foreign player. He wouldn't be classed as a homegrown player for 2 years within the rules, so he couldn't go. So they were frustrated. I play the players I see who are playing in games and what I think are the best ones for the squad. I'm just sad for him, really, because it would have done him good. I look at Chelsea. I just said to somebody else, Tammy Abraham, Tomori, Mason Mount. Three of them have been out on loan. Went to Derby. Tammy Abraham has had three or four loans. Tomori went to Hull and then he went to Derby. They're playing in the Premier League now. But they've had to go out and get match hardened, battle hardened by playing in the Championship.
Just to ask you about Shane Long, it looked like his confidence was gone in the middle of last year, and he obviously had to pull out of the Irish squad due to injuries. It seems like Ralph Hasenhüttl is getting the best out of him now. He's scoring goals. Are we looking at maybe now Shane Long as a starter in those Slovakia games? Do you think he's good enough now to be scoring again at international level?
I never doubted his ability, Shane, but the ability to play because of his injuries, and he wasn't playing. The manager, Ralph Hasenhüttl, seems to be putting his trust in him, putting his faith in him. Shane's doing... Well, he's doing what he needs to do, which is play games, and he's scored a couple of goals over the last two or three weeks. Seeing his goals, seeing him play once, I never doubted his ability or the effect he can have on his team, but if he stays fit and he keeps playing the way he is, he's got a chance.
Shane Duffy, on the other hand, watching his game against Watford the other night, it looked like maybe his time on the bench is starting to affect the way he plays now. He maybe got caught out a couple of times against Watford. Is that something you maybe spotted yourself?
Not really. He'd just come back from being out after an operation. I think he had a blood vessel that had burst, so yeah. I think all that affects him. Coming into a team with Brighton as well, they're not exactly flying, are they? So, you know, they're not full of confidence. I know playing at centre-half and being such a big fella, you need to keep training, you need to be playing, so it would affect him. But once he's back training, he'll be fine, Shane. I hope he stays in the team, because it'll be better for us. He's been a really important player for us.
Just on your own experience, Mick, as a centre-half, and we're looking at some of the Irish players, like Seamus Coleman we've seen playing on the right of a back three for Everton. John Egan's playing in a back three. Matt Doherty plays in the system with a back three, so does Enda Stevens. When you see all the players like that doing so well, is it kind of giving you maybe some ideas to maybe tinker with the formation in the Slovakia game, or is it really too late in the campaign to be doing that?
4 days. They come in on the Sunday night. We train on the Monday, and Southampton Brighton play on Sunday. So the first training session we'll have will be Monday. We travel to Slovakia on Tuesday, and we have a day on the pitch on Wednesday. We play Thursday. It's not going to be a revolution in changing what we're doing. And we played three at the back against Switzerland for 30 minutes, and it's probably the worst we've played. So I'll not be considering that too deeply now.
I just ask you finally, Mick, obviously Brexit has happened over the last couple of months, and there seems to be, well, not the suggestion, but it is going to have a big impact on the movement of players between the UK and Ireland. Do you think it's going to be something positive for Irish players in the sense that, you know, maybe they'll stay in the League of Ireland a little bit longer, get a bit more experience playing senior football before they can actually make a move to the UK?
So you say, wow, I've not heard that word for a while, Brexit. That's well done for mentioning that one. Is it good for Irish players? I don't know. What would be good for Irish players if the league was bombing and all the teams were flying and they were all full time, or you know, I'm not sure what is good for Irish players. I mean, look at all the good teams we've had over the years of good players. Robbie Keane, who's record amount of games, record goal scorer. When did he leave? 16. I wonder when David O'Leary left and Liam Brady left and Frank Stapleton left, and they all ended up being really good players. I'm not sure, but look, there's changes afoot in the FAI. I know Quinn is involved. They're trying to get now look at different ways they can do with the league and improve it. So let's all hope that happens and we all get better players and end up with better teams. Wouldn't it be great?
Thanks, Mick.
Pleasure.
Yeah, Mick, as ever, interesting on a few different things. Don't think we're going to see a back three. Just a hunch there, Dan.
No, I think he's
and his last answer there, I wonder, you know, he obviously is an FAI employee, he wants to talk up domestic football and improving the production line on this island. But I think maybe, you know, in so much as he could, he was almost saying, well, actually, I think he was being honest when he said, I don't know what's best.
No, maybe
there is an argument that going over at 16 to a big English club who have a tradition of bringing through players against the better players in the world, maybe that is the way through. Mightn't be good for them, for the 90% who don't make it.
Well, that's the problem. And like, you know, David O'Leary and Stapleton and others went at a time when they weren't going into, you know, a multicultural Premier League. So, you know, they would have been further up the pecking order when they started. But to be fair, I guess he probably hasn't had time to consider these things. And why should he really? Because he's done when the Euro 2020 is over. You know what I mean? Like, it's his brief is very straightforward now. And I think it's very restrictive now. And even today, a general tone of today for me, like there's questions about young players. Very natural, and we all ask them. And if you don't ask them, people will be on to it. What did he say about Jason Knight or Darragh O'Shea or Adam Ida? What's he saying about these people? So it's a bit of a hard one for him. But in reality, they're not going to be relevant to him. You know, maybe if Ireland get through the two games, then you have a tournament summer and you look at it in a different way. But he doesn't have any kind of long-term brief. So his hands are tied in terms of even to theorise and expand upon it. But
well, his face when Stephen mentioned Brexit there was, you know, you couldn't see it listening on the radio, but he did not know where that question was going for a second. Even on Troy Parrott now, what he's effectively said today is like, okay, that it ain't going to be me and Troy. You know, it doesn't look like he's going to
doesn't look like it.
Spurs. He's 17. That's Stephen Kenny's situation.
And Stephen Kenny will be able to give a much different answer to the Brexit question. But that's because his perspective has always been from this side of the water, pretty much. And Mick has existed in his own world for a long period of time. So, but I mean, it is a fascinating thing. I don't think people realise the extent of it. But we will in due course. It'll become a part of our everyday discussion, I think, in terms of better football production.
And by the way, just we got to go because Pat Nevin is waiting patiently. For people who are listening and are not too sure of this Brexit thing and haven't read a thing or two about it, in short, all the best young players in this country from all the best clubs, the traditional clubs around the country who at 14, 15, 16, 17 would head over to the UK in the post-Brexit era will now be staying here.
They can't go until 18. Now, in theory, they're not meant to leave until they're 16. But and this is the one slight caveat, is that, you know, certain people, Jack Byrne left at 14, you know, clubs find a way, and it's very possible that the super clubs may find a way to get the best ones over. You know, entire families suddenly might find themselves moving or landing new jobs or whatever it might be.
UK residents.
But I'm just saying that this whole idea of clubs taking a punt on a 16, filling up academies with four or five Irish lads going to a particular club. Yeah. Not that happens too much now anyway, but yeah, that thing of taking a punt on someone, they're going to have to really work their way around the system, it would appear. Okay. We're still trying to educate ourselves in it fully, but it doesn't look like there's going to be clauses or exemptions or something made. So yeah, it's a massive sea change.
Yeah, sure is.
It's coming down the tracks.
Short break, Pat Nevin with us then.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.
I've come to enjoy our Monday evenings, Pat. And there I saw you alongside David Moyes, new coach at West Ham, and I thought, one, he's abandoned us and that's very bad news. Two, he might have mentioned it to us. He doesn't owe us anything. He might have said something. Thankfully, that was not the case.
I would have left a little hint. Trust me. I would have left a big old hint. Don't worry. Like, wow, I love West Ham. They're one of my favourite teams. Something like that. But it was the funniest thing because I woke up in the morning and, turned my phone off on about an hour later and I just went mad. And it's all, congratulations on your new job at West Ham and well done. And people want to phone and interview you, and I'm just thinking, well, that's interesting because I didn't know I was.
How much am I getting paid?
I know, I can't remember. Have I got an agent who's done a job for me that I didn't know about? And I just laughed. I thought it was very funny because obviously you know what's happened. Like Moyes is a good mate. They've seen P and Evan, and they've thought, yeah, go for that. But I think it was the Daily Mail that originally went big on it, and a few others picked up on it afterwards. And I just thought it was absolutely hilarious. And I don't do Twitter a lot. I've got a Twitter account. I don't do it a lot. And I had to get on really quickly and just have a bit of a laugh with it. And more importantly, whoever made that mistake to say, look, it's an easy mistake. I didn't want whoever it was, he or she, to be sacked for it either. But it was absolutely hilarious. Having said that, had they been given the job, I wonder if I'd have taken it.
Well, there, interesting question. P. Nevin, by the way, for people wondering, P. Nevin, former Norwich and Brighton coach, is who has gone in with David Moyes, hence the confusion. Well, I was wondering if you would have taken it, because I was reading a recent interview you did actually with the Daily Mail, seeing as you mentioned the Mail, and they asked you about management and why you had never been involved, really. And your answer was short and to the point. You said, because I like life, was your answer.
Absolutely. I mean, I love football, as you can tell. I'm very interested. I mean, great job that I've got just now, running around the country and running around Europe and sometimes around the world, you know, watching football games and talking about it. But there's other things I've got in my life that I want to do. You know, and like, if you do management or coaching to that level, you have to give everything. It means interest, hobbies, family, you name it. Mm. If you're going to do it right at that level, you're just completely and utterly consumed by it. And I've never kind of been that type of person. I don't think that makes me a bad person, but I'll own up to it and put my hands up. And it's one of those things, don't go into that job half-hearted. Really don't do that. Don't expect it to be a 9-to-5. So I never, ever had interest in it. I did, however, have some interest in doing individual training for individual players. And that sort of thing of looking at them and breaking it up technically, what was going right or wrong with them, I've always found that quite interesting. But it's quite specialised, and not many teams would be involved. I mean, I've been asked once or twice to do it on a few occasions, but other than that, no, it wouldn't have interested me greatly. And, you know, that doesn't mean you don't love football. It just means you're allowed to love life too.
I'm sure. I think we all understand why a manager's role is 24/7. The phone is always on. There's always a player with some problem, probably outside of hours, and various things to be discussed outside of hours. Is a coaching role less demanding as you understand it in the modern game? Can a coach underneath an overall manager switch off a bit more come 5-6 o'clock?
Yeah, I suppose what level of coach you are, if you are the assistant.
Say West Ham.
Yeah, if you are the assistant, yeah. You know, the main assistant to the coach or one of the two main assistants to the coach, you know, there is still limited, very limited amount of time to turn off. And to be fair, going to that level wouldn't have interested me either, because there's a bit of, if you're going to do a job, you want to be doing it. I mean, I've had a brilliant quote from Seinfeld recently. He's trying to explain his interest in life. And he said, like, if someone offered him, you know, a big yacht to go on or a surfboard, he takes a surfboard because he wants to be in the water. He doesn't want to be sitting on top of it watching other people. He wants to be in it. And that's the kind of thing I feel. Anything I want to do, I want to be kind of controlling of it and doing what I want to do in it, not under somebody else being told what to do. And I've been fortunate enough in my life generally to be in that position. And if you're an assistant coach quite far down the pecking order, I don't know, I wouldn't really fancy that at all. I mean, you do it if you need to do it. People have to work, we all have to work. But it wouldn't be my first choice.
No, fair enough. Obviously, limited games at the weekend. The winter break continues. Sheffield United beat Bournemouth. I think you were at the game. I certainly want to ask you about the job that Chris Wilder is doing. Everton 3, Palace 1, that's 17 points out of 24 for Ancelotti. So, you know, it turns out he is a good manager. And Brighton and Watford drew 1-1. So Carlo's working his magic, as we might have expected. Just on Jordan Pickford, who let in a soft goal, and it quotes have kind of, I think it's because it's a quiet weekend. They're not that extraordinary, but people are talking about them. He's had an inconsistent 18 months or so. Dean Henderson at Sheffield United is playing very well. And he was saying afterwards that he feels a touch victimised, a touch under the microscope as an England player in particular. So what he said was, the press, everybody, the punters, look at Gary Neville, everyone hates you for some reason. I just get on with it. Yeah, it hurts. I know I have been good for England. This is not remarkable. Well, the point I was going to ask you, so I'm sorry to interrupt, but what I wanted to ask you was, this is, you know, the cut and thrust of football. You know, the temptation would be to ask you about dealing with criticism. But in your current role, and say Gary Neville as well, do you ever get a pang of guilt? As in, here I am, being paid to stick my oar in, give an opinion. I don't know what's going on necessarily with Jordan Pickford. He may be carrying an injury. He may have certain things going on. I've caused upset to somebody, maybe their family as well. Is that a thing that hits you as a pundit?
You've asked me a lot of questions over the last few years, and that's my favourite that you've ever asked. It really is, because to some people it wouldn't be important. You'd get a pat answer. You'd get a line, or oh, just tell it like it is kind of thing. Actually, no, that's massively, massively important to me, because I never wanted, there's a number of things, and I'm talking about football and footballers, and I have to try and remember what it was like. That's what you're asking me for, professional opinion, what it was like. Now, if I'm thinking that, I'm thinking what it felt like when someone had a dig. Now, I was quite fortunate, it didn't happen very often in my career, but I kind of remembered it when it did. So when I do say things about players, if it's never vicious and nasty just for the sake of it, and I try never to be clever in a snide way. Yes, you can be funny, but if you see a reason why, I was talking about Dean Henderson, right on subject, right on topic, before the game, seen an interview with him, and he came across as super confident. And I made a point of explaining what the difference is between being super confident and being an arrogant git. There's a difference, there's a line. And that's a line that I think about. So when I'm answering these questions, they're not always a binary answer, because that's kind of what the media want and that's where the headlines live. I'm not going to give you that. I'm going to give you something nuanced. I'm going to give you understanding. If someone's sort of dropped a clang and had a stinker, you just say it. It's okay. They should know too. They should get it. But on lines like, oh, he's an idiot, or he's stupid, or what the hell was he thinking? That's useless. What you say is, right, this is the reasons why. So if he drops a clanger, my first thing I'm going to look at and go, okay, what were his angles like? Was he in any way? There was a goal a couple of weeks ago. Aretha Balaga let a goal in. And it was a really important goal against Arsenal, second goal, and everyone was digging him out about it. And before they'd seen it a second time, and I'm thinking, right, okay, he's a guy under pressure just now. But I'm going to look at it first. And I'm not giving them the benefit of doubt. I'm just going to be honest. There was two people blocking it. There was no way he could see that goal. No chance. Not a hope in the world. But because other pundits have said, he's a terrible disgrace, they cannot back off that now. Or they will not back off that now. So when I say something, I'm very, very specific about it. I will look at it. I will consider it. And if it's badly wrong, I'll say it's badly wrong. You've made a mistake. I won't call him an idiot for doing it. And I'll try to think and understand the reasons why. Because people don't make mistakes like that for no reason. There's usually a reason. It may be lack of concentration. It might be whatever. Give information. So that's the difference I am with some other pundits. I would hope that my position is to enlighten a little bit. Okay, if you want a headline, go somewhere else. It's not me. It's not. I'm never going to be the guy to give you that. So have I ever been discomforted from it? Yes, there have been occasions like that. But I've always thought, no, I've given you every bit of information. I've tried to cover you in every sort of area. And that is quite simply the truth as I see it. But I've really considered it. So it's considered. Whereas if you're on Sky and you're on whatever every single day, you need to shout, you need to bawl, you need to give it. And you'll have it in Ireland as well. You know, and for John Giles onwards, everyone knows it, everyone sees it. I just don't have to play that game. So maybe it's a bit easier, different for me.
Yeah, because it always strikes me, you know, well, I've often thought about it myself, even asking the question sometimes, because we are always on the outside. We never know exactly if a player is heroically battling through a chronic injury as opposed to desperately underperforming for months on end. And I hate not knowing that when we discuss a player. Or Jesse Lingard, for instance, over the last year, has been criticised for his performances. Like, rightly so, his performances haven't been good, but then he came out and explained that, well, his mother is very ill, he's looking after his brother and sister, he's spending, I think one of them is being homeschooled because they're finding the situation so difficult, he's running from training to look after them, to parent-teacher meetings, his mother is ill. Oh, and by the way, he's just had a newborn baby as well. And he eventually had to knock on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's door and say, I can't cope, you know, I've got a lot going on here actually, and it's draining my energy a little bit. Now, for the 4 months up until that moment, and he goes public on it, we're just saying, I saw the video he did in holidays in Miami where he's acting like an idiot. He obviously doesn't care very much, doesn't seem like a great fella. And we're always juggling with the lack of information.
And all you actually can go in is with the information that you have. And you feel that saying, as a journalist, and I'm a partial journalist myself, I almost want to say, well, okay, give me the information and let me speak. But of course, sometimes it's personal. Mm. Sometimes there's difficulties. I had the same problem when my mum was ill and dying. You know, I was really struggling. And I remember getting a bit of stick somewhere I was playing and thinking, being angry, but not being angry for long, because I thought, well, you don't know, mate. You just don't understand. You know, there's no way you should understand. And I understood. I took that, and I took that on board. But it's easy to be like that if you're the sort of person who can have a wider view of things. When you're in the midst of it, when you're under that amount of stress, it's very difficult. That's the most impossible time to get your head above the parapet and see what the hell's going on. So, yeah, you do try to take that into consideration as well. That's why I'm never particularly snide about anyone. As people who I think are less good, say we're managers, I don't think I've ever said the phrase, sack him. Mm. I don't think I've ever said it. I've been working this business for quarter a century. I don't ever said it. But I've said, look, he's got limitations there. There's his strengths. Is that going to be enough? That might not be enough, and they might get relegated. Then you need to make a decision. So but that's not going to get a headline, is it? Mm. The headline is, I'm going to hammer you. But there's plenty of guys out there doing that. There's millions of people out there doing that. It just doesn't interest me, because I want to see the bigger picture. And I do try to dig in to get as much of the picture as possible. But sometimes it's quite simply impossible until afterwards. Yeah. I can't remember a single time where I thought, oh my God, I can't believe I said that, because I never thought, you know. Can I take you back to when it happened? Right, just jumped in. The day it actually happened, right? So, and it's nothing got to do with football. So I was playing for Chelsea, and I was writing for the NME, music, and I was writing for various other music magazines, sometimes under an assumed name, sometimes on the moon. And I'd done a singles review. And I did a singles review of a Depeche Mode early single, right? And I wasn't a big fan of them. And it was a bit curt, a bit slightly snide. And it was very much in the music press we were writing. Anyway, out it went, and I never thought another thing, because there was about 10 other interviews in it, bits in it. He was a Chelsea fan. And he was a big fan of mine. And he got somebody to get in touch. He said he was a bit disappointed and saddened. And I just thought, I can't play a note. Well, I can actually. I can play a bit of clarinet, but I couldn't do anywhere close to what he could do.
Yeah.
What a cheek I actually had to be that smart aleck about it. And I just thought, no, I'm going to be like that. You know, critics are pathetic that way unless they are considered. And I was about 21, 22.
Mm.
Since then, I never done.
Yeah, no. It's actually a painful lesson to go through at this end. I can relate.
Come on, you're going to go up to yours?
No, there's too many times. There's too many times I've driven home from here and thought, you know, you feel like you're sticking your oar in sometimes without all the information. You can go home and not feel good about it. So it's a routine thing on this show sometimes.
Yeah, I rarely feel it. And I've had a couple of people come back to me. Martin O'Neill, he was one, phoned me up one night. I'm absolutely digging in there, having a right good go, and I'm going, tell me what's wrong. And in actual fact, 25 minutes later, 30 minutes later in the phone call, we were laughing and killing ourselves laughing at all the stupidity of it all. I think it was fine after that.
Yeah.
And there's been one or two people, but there's usually, it's not what you said or what you even intimated, it's something else. And when you can dig down to where that is with a person, it just releases and it's fine. And that's the two or three times it's happened in my life, that's what's happened.
Mm. One last question in all this. You've been in elite dressing rooms. Have many players made it to elite dressing rooms and still at the same time found the criticism of pundits very difficult to deal with and it's affected them or their confidence?
I would say most have suffered with it at some point. Really upset, and including managers, including coaches. I found it stunning. The story, I remember once playing for Scotland, and at the end of the game, we'd done okay, and we got a draw, and it was up at Hampden Park, and we were really pleased with it, and we came back in the dressing room, and the coach and the manager, instead of coming and talking to us about this great effort we came in, they went into this wee side room, and I was walking by, and I heard them saying, how will we play this in the press? And I'm thinking, sod the press. Mm. Get your players in there. They're the people you need to deal with first. They're the people you need to talk to. You need to say whatever needs to be said to. What about the press later? They're secondary. So that was coaches that were doing that. Some players got really, really riled with it, took it very, very personally. And it feels personal. It very, very rarely is. Mm. You just happen to be in the way. And you, it's like a journalist, if you get done in a newspaper, it's not you they're aiming at. They just want a wee story. Mm. And you have to be that one person removed from it. But that's easy to say for some of us, because some of us could do it. For a lot of them, they got very, very angry, and it did sometimes affect their performances. And it's more, I would say more were affected by it than were. It's that bad.
Right. I guess we're all human. I mentioned Carlo at the top. Turns out he's a good manager, I said, because it is funny when you think back before the 17 points from 24 points, there were even misgivings out there about Carlo Ancelotti. Well, I mean, he can do it when he's handling world-class players. What's it, is Everton, is he going to be able to get a trick out of this group? And, well, he seems to have done very well. What's he doing? What's the difference in Everton?
Well, you have to look at the scores. You have to look really closely at the scores, right? I've got lots of friends of Evertonians, and I've watched it as much as I possibly can. And are they that much better than they were before? Not sure. Not sure about that.
Okay.
So what is it? Tiny little differences. That's often what they say. Simplified it. Quite often going for a 4-4-2 just now. That's the simplest formation for most players to cope with. You just, everybody knows exactly where to go. There's no thought processes. It's just structure and organisation. So you get that. You get the right bits in the right places. But tiny little changes like getting a bit better from everybody. Now, that means different things to different players. Like, classically, Walcott, he's just kind of never really done it to any level regularly with Everton. Suddenly, he's on a really good run of form. But you need to try and find out why that is. It's under Carlo. I look at other players. I mean, Calvert-Lewin, the obvious one, right? Calvert-Lewin suddenly is a much better player. Now, there might be technical reasons for that, but Big Duncan's talked to him, done a wee bit of coaching. But if you notice in the newspaper, Carlo's saying he could be one of the great strikers in England. There goes his ego and confidence as well. There, it's gone. He's just said a phrase. And suddenly, there the chest is out. He's standing tall. He feels like the main man. And the confidence has completely changed. Tiny little things like that. And it's just like that. And it's almost from a distance looks really, really easy and really simple. And it's not big changes, because have a look at all the results. Since he's come in, that win, the 3-1 win there at the weekend, is the first time they won by more than a goal. All the wins by a single goal. It's just that. That's it. That's the width of a post. That's all that is. Mm. That's a refereeing decision. That's a tiny, tiny little percentage. It's nothing more than that. And that's the difference that he's made. And it's been amazing to see that small little things of knowing, right, that's the correct two centre-backs, right, we stick with them. Not complicated. There you go. That's all you get. Knowing players. He's dealt. Richarlison's a great example. I guess he is the perfect guy to get the best out of Richarlison. Because Richarlison, if anything, you get a feeling he doesn't have a huge amount of respect for anybody else's opinion above his own. You just get that feeling about him as a player, as a person. Mm. And that's fine. Lots of players are like that. Particularly creative, skillful, certain types of players. Carlo Ancelotti's been dealing with them all his life. Yeah. Getting them all his life. He knows how to do that. He knows how to manipulate them. They're not big, complex characters to him. Is he anywhere close to the more complex ones that he's dealt with? Well, probably not. So he's getting the best out of him as well. So I love the fact that he's getting all these tiny little bits, a wee bit better, adding them together, zoom, straight up the league. And now he's got that team that we always thought was a decent team in there, and there he's got it. There's his decent team. They're not a lot more than that. They're just a decent team. But that's good enough in the current Premier League to get up to seventh. It's lovely to see. It's great to see. Can I say one last thing about that? Well done, Everton. Because what a big call that was to get Carlo Ancelotti. It's just as you said, just that we all thought, big manager for big teams who have got big players. Mm. But to go for him and to have, you know, the cojones to go and get him, spend the money, and it turning out to be an absolute cracker of a decision. Well done, Everton. That's a beauty.
Yes, turning out that way. Sheffield United then, they beat Bournemouth 2-1. They are 4 points ahead of Manchester United. United do have a game in hand, but still 4 points ahead of United. They are 2 points off a Champions League spot. I mean, you kind of can't not give Jurgen Klopp a manager of the year. You just kind of can't. And yet, Chris Wilder, I mean, can they split the award?
You look at now, if you keep it going until the end of the season and top five, I mean, dare say top four, you've got to say that's as good as you've seen for forever, really. It's an amazing, change. And you look at how many of those players that have came through leagues with him. I mean, how many of those players have got a lot of Premier League experience? It's just so limited. He comes in with new ideas. He's changed the system slightly. He's got 3-5-2 now. It was 3-4-1-2 before. It's not that big a change. It helps, I mean, I've chatted to this before, that teams that come in with three at the back confuse the Premier League. You know, Conte did it and won the Premier League with it, but everyone sussed it the next year. So you had to adapt. That's fine. Will Chris Wilder adapt? Well, I was wondering about that. At the game at the weekend, I was blown away by him. I thought his changes were absolutely fantastic. And they were that subtle, but they were that effective. So they're 1-0 down. They're getting hammered for the first 20 minutes. Bournemouth are passing them to death. They're trying to pass it out through the midfield from the back, and they're getting cut out every single time. And then somebody goes down after 20 minutes and grabs a couple of them over and he just says, explains two or three things. I didn't hear what he said. Game changed totally in that second. They started playing it more direct, but also wider and longer to stretch the game, using the wing backs in a slightly different way. Total change in game. And, you know, 10 minutes after, utter domination. And that utter domination continued for the rest of the match. So he's got little adaptations he made were brilliant. I mean, really quite brilliant. Mm. He's also managed to keep what looks like the fittest team in the league. Those players, it's not only fitness. And the classic one was McBurnie. The end of the game, he had cramp with 15 minutes to go. But with 1 minute to go, he was still chasing into a corner. And you're thinking, how are you doing that? They will do anything for him. They will buy into everything he wants to do. And it's all about effort and fitness. And again, it's not often you say it, but they were far fitter than their opponents. Man for man, they were just fitter. They were just shut, and it's an unusual phrase to use in the Premier League, but they were noticeably fitter than Bournemouth. Now, Bournemouth have got 1, 2, 3 players coming back from injuries, and if you've got, you know, it's like if you looked at a rugby game, if there's one guy or two guy who's injured and not fit, the opposition will find that gap. That's where you're laying. Football's kind of exactly the same. You can't keep up at that level unless you've got 9 to 10 at least that are absolutely firing all cylinders and are bought into it when you're playing against 11 that are buying into it 100%. And that's what he's got just now. It's stunning to see. He's got the advantage. There's no European football. He's got the advantage. There hardly been any injuries at all, particularly that back three and that midfield five. He's done one other brilliant thing. He brought a new player in, Berger. And I don't know if you've seen him. If anybody watched him, this is great. You watch this one. Now and again, I give you one of these to watch, right? This is a cracker to watch, right? He's 6'5". He is hopeless in the air. He's useless. It's the worst of ever. I mean, I've only seen him one game. If he's that bad, it's actually going to become really obvious. But he's actually brilliant on the ground. It's a bit of the Torre Andre Flores, if people remember that. Used to think he'd be a great big centre forward. He wasn't. He was hopeless in the air. But he's a great centre forward and his feet were great. But this kid, he's 21, 22. And he just walked into that team, and the best sign you can ever see for a new player. As soon as a new player comes in and he gets in and he's in front of one of the guys who's normally there, you think, okay, one, you've got to respect him, you've got to like him. And the way you find that out, do they pass it to him immediately?
Yeah.
They were hammering the ball, giving them the ball. They rate him. 2 weeks in training, they know he can play. And what that tells me is Wilder is adding really well at this point, and he's fitting in players that will walk into that side and do a job as well. It's really hard to see a negative at any place, and the fans were brilliant as well. What a buzz about the place. I mean, I had a great day. I loved it. I thought Sheffield were fantastic.
Okay, great. Very interesting. I think we're done. I think we emerged from this with our conscience clear as well.
I don't know. We've all got things wrong. The thing is, seeing you do get it wrong, just say, sorry, that was over the top. And that kind of works as well. I once made a mistake to Dunfermline. This may be online, so anyone who's looking who's got a computer in front of them may still be online. But I was doing a Hibs v Dunfermline match, and I'm a Hibby, and I'd said Hibs would hammer them. Anyway, some guy made a song up, and it was called Pat Nevin Idiot, and it was a cover of who's the band that did, the American band that did that? It's genius. It is absolutely brilliant. And when I saw it, I immediately got in touch with a guy and said, that's class, mate. Hands up. You got, right.
I mean, you got to be careful now. You could have a new intro song here. We got to be, you know.
Oh, no, go for it, man. I don't think myself that serious. And Pat Nevin Idiot is good for me, man.
Listen, thanks so much. We'll see you next Monday.
Look forward to it. See you then.
Paddy Power and the Football Show, the greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.